Young Preneurs Podcast, episode number 152 with your host, Victor Ahipini. What's up, world? Another day, another podcast. And today I've got with me Jeremy Slate, and he is the founder of the Create Your Own Life podcast and also helps other people boost their authority by getting them on podcasts themselves. Jeremy has had a pretty awesome story. He's gone from studying at Oxford, being a teacher, and then transitioned to becoming an online entrepreneur and helping a lot of people really boost their brand and their image. And so this is a really, really interesting episode that we have, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of takeaways if you're looking to get more exposure for yourself, more branding, or just if you're looking to transition and make that step out of something you might not be completely fulfilled with, and you know, the trials and tribulations and the things that come along with that. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy it, and if you do, please jump over to iTunes and leave a rating and a review, or subscribe however you listen to your podcasts. I'd love to hear from you over at passiveincomeyoung.com, where we have all our previous episodes, our show notes with everything we talk about today, as well as a free 4-video series on how you can start a business for absolutely $0. And it's a cool system that I've used myself, and you're going to get a lot of value out of it. So make sure you go and grab that as well. In the meantime, guys, grab a pen and paper, sit back, relax, and keep living life on your own terms. You're listening to the Youngpreneurs Podcast, the number one resource online for under 35-year-olds, where we chat twice a week to the most inspiring entrepreneurs in the world. We have it all if you're looking for inspiration, guidance, or actionable tips to help you transition from that job into a business, or if you're ready to take that business to a whole new level, then this is the place to be. Get ready to live life on your own terms. Youngpreneurs, welcome to another episode of the Youngpreneurs Podcast. Super stoked to have you here as always, as you could be anywhere, but you're listening to us right now. So, and when I say us, I've got my friend Jeremy Slate here, and he is another podcaster and also a PR expert. And yeah, we're just going to delve into everything that's kind of happened on his journey, which will hopefully help you on yours. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks for having me, Victor. I am stoked to be hanging out with you today, man.
Man, I'm so stoked to have you on here, but I love to break down the barriers. Like, we all put our own bullshit up on different days about, you know, why I can't be an entrepreneur, or, you know, so-and-so had the money and I didn't, and their parents gave it to them on a platter, or the different things. How did you get into this this fiery world of entrepreneurship? Was it always on the cards? Was it like, hey man, I'm gonna be this, you know, I'm gonna be the next Zuckerberg or the next Bill Gates, or yeah, I'm gonna be working for myself? Or did it kind of accidentally come about?
It's funny, man, because I feel like now it's like really like cool to be an entrepreneur. Like, everybody wants to do it. And I was the furthest thing from when I first heard the word entrepreneur at 17. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, a person that doesn't do anything. we had this one buddy that I always used to work out with, and he was always talking about wanting to be an entrepreneur. I'm like, man, that lazy bastard, he doesn't want to do anything. So I'm going to be 30 next month. And so for me, like, it originally, the plan was I wanted to be a college professor. So that was kind of the furthest thing from being an entrepreneur. So I got my undergrad degree from Seton Hall, studied literature at Oxford, and then I got my MA in ancient history from Seton Hall, and kind of didn't get into the PhD program I wanted to get into. And I ended up teaching high school, which, let me tell you, man, if your goal is to be in college and you end up teaching in a private high school, it sucks. It's like no fun. They stick you in a room with 40 kids. And they're like, all right, time to teach them. And they're like, they're not engaged at all. They're throwing shit at you. They're swearing at you. And you're just kind of like, God, I hate my life. So I did that for like 2 years. And I just wasn't happy, man. So I jumped out of that and actually went full time into network marketing for about 3 years. And I made some money, but it's no way to live, man, because you start communicating in a weird way. You're trying to recruit everybody around you. And it wasn't fun after a while. So I sold life insurance for a bit, did some digital marketing. And then in 2015, I started the Create Your Own Life podcast. And it really hit off and allowed me to do a lot of different things in the content marketing world and the blogging world. So then I started getting featured in publications. I started doing all these different things. I built a network, which was really cool. And we decided, my friend Daniel Geffen and I, that, hey, we can get people on podcasts as a PR play. And we found out that it was really, really needed and wanted. And we very quickly built a business that now has 22 customers we have that we get on podcasts. We've done well over 100 shows of getting people on shows. And it's been very different from where I expected myself to be. I expected myself to be, you know, teaching out of college.
Yeah.
Nowhere like where I am now, man.
From chasing tenure to chasing your rent money for next week, it's like, yeah, you're like, where can I find the cruisiest job in teaching or at a university where I can just, you know, lock in that job for the rest of my life and not cruise to 65, but, you know, try and find the solidarity to jumping out and going, shit, where do I find my next client? Otherwise, life gets stressful. So it's quite cool because I talk to other people who have got podcasts, but I mean, I guess you and I have kind of busted out of being unknown. Like I was in the physiotherapy world and, you know, gone from being unknown to you know, authorities in different industries pretty quickly with the power of podcasting, which is something that, you know, I love and I preach to other people. But what took you over that lump, and did you have a long-term play when you first started the podcast?
I had no idea, man. Like I always wanted to do something creative and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I started a podcast in beginning of 2015 and it was the worst thing. It was atrocious. It was called Rock Your Life. And I did the graphic design at the time at Microsoft Paint. So it was really bad. The audio, there was no miking. It was me talking at my laptop and I was an expert on nothing. Yeah. So it lasted about a month and a half and it was really bad because I had been a podcast listener for years and years and years. And I was like, all right, I can do this. I'm going to try and create something. And it just fell flat on its face. It was really bad because my whole thing was, well, I don't want to have a video show because I hate looking at myself on video. So I'll start a podcast. Sounds really easy. And it didn't go so well. So then in September of that year, I ended up getting married and I was kind of like, well, dude, what are you going to do the rest of your life? You know, you're not in the career you went to be in. You have a whole lot of student loan debt. So like, how are you going to like actually do something with your life? I'm like, well, let me try this podcasting thing out again. Let me just try to create something quality. Cause I have this whole idea. If you create something that helps other people survive well, and you do a really great job at it, that you're going to get the right kind of attention and the right kind of things are going to come your way. Like, you have to work. You're not just going to be like, I want this and you're going to get it. But if you create something that really helps a lot of people on another level, you're able to create something bigger. And so I actually took a course and learned how to podcast the right way. What kind of equipment do I need? What kind of design work do I need? And then I made a list of the top 100 people that I admired. And I sent out individual emails to each one of them. It took me about 8 hours to write them. But I wrote things that mattered to me about each one of those people. And I got a lot of them to say yes, which was shocking to me. So I actually approached it as a student or as somebody that wanted to learn because, you know, you go to college for as many years as I did and you get to be a professional student. So I was very good at learning from those people. And I kind of realized the more I learned, the more of an expert I became. So it kind of gave me something that I could really give people. And then when I kind of about a year and I realized, wow, I'm actually making money off this. How the hell did this happen? Because I didn't really intend that in the beginning. I just wanted to create something that really helped other people that were in a position that I was in. Like a lot of people when they started a podcast are like, well, who's your avatar? Who's your audience? Who's the person you're speaking to? I was speaking to me. I was talking to, you know, like, what would I want to learn? What do I feel like would really help me? And interestingly enough, I feel like a lot of people in my generation were looking for that. So that was, I think, why it resounded and why it took off so much.
And I mean, so you're basically the Van Wilder of university, just the professional student who then decided, shit, what am I going to do with my life? But
it's funny enough though, because that's the reason I went to grad school. It was like, all right, what? College is done. What am I going to do? Let's go to grad school. There's still more college.
Yeah. What? Four more years. Let me have a little bit longer. With the podcasting side of things, how did you, I mean, reaching out, and this is, it's actually a really, I actually want to delve into this more. Like, you reached out to all those people and it's stuff that I've obviously done as well that, you build these relationships. Like we had Grant Cardone on here not so long ago, and some other influencers from around Australia. When I say influencers, some other successful entrepreneurs who, you know, would of if you said to 2014 me, like, you're going to be talking to, you know, this guy worth, you know, $100 million and this guy worth $400 million or this guy who's changing the world. Like, you know, you're going to have 30 minutes sit down time with them just to ask them whatever you want. It's crazy what can be done. I mean, it's a mind shift. It's a paradigm shift of like, shit, like I was here with these guys and, you know, admiring them, and now I get to, you know, ask them questions and be on a more equal level. What were some of the, you know, some of the key points when you were reaching out to people and networking with them to put them over the edge? Because I mean, I like to think that I'm not too bad at this myself. When I, you know, go after particular people, but then, you know, at the same time, I'll jump onto my website and there'll be, you know, people who have gone on the contact form and the PR agents, and they're just such generic bullshit that it's like, yeah, hey, Victor, love your show, and then spiel. Like, you're like, bullshit, you've even listened to my show. Like,
and they put the wrong show name on there or something like that.
Yeah. And it's like, hey, we really love your show. I think our person would be a great fit. And they're like 65 years old. You're like, yeah, I don't think they would be a great fit considering my show is under 35 year olds generally, unless it's, you know, somebody who's got a, you know, a massive lesson. Yeah, you know, I make exceptions for the Grant Cardones of the world, but, you know, the Joe Bloggs who I've never heard of and no one else has ever heard of, that you don't kind of get the same leeway. So what's some of the things that you've found that have been really beneficial, not just in podcasting, but in networking?
Well, for me, for podcasting, for like meeting people, one of the biggest things is like actually getting the decision maker. Because I think so many times one of the big things I say is avoid the contact form at all costs. Like, never use a contact form on a website because it's going to go into this general mailbox. Nobody's going to read it. Nothing's going to happen with it. So one of the biggest things, I use a tool called Hunter.io. I don't know if you've ever used it before.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And it used to be called Email Hunter. And that was one of the biggest things that I would use to try and get in touch with the decision maker. So like, I would try and email the person that I wanted to speak to. And what I would do as well is, I feel like there's, and Ryan Holiday wrote an article about this not too long ago. There's too many podcasters sending out the exact same pitch email. Like, be on my show because of blah, 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 blah. Mm. And the reason that I don't like that is you're saying be on my show because of me, 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 me.
Yeah.
And so the thing I like to start out with is when I'm emailing somebody, I tell them how much I appreciate what they've done, what they produce, and how it's actually helped me in my life. And I think that's something people don't think about because they're thinking about, well, I need this person on my show to get attention and survive. Well, if that's the case, they can feel that, number one. And number two, you're not really helping anybody. So you have to kind of think about it like that, that you want to show these people how much of an effect that you've had in their life. And then you also have a platform that you can feature them on. Like, you want to say, I would love to, you want to tell the type of story you'd like to tell with them. And that's what a lot of people don't do with a guest, because they'll be like, well, all right, we want him in your show. What do you want to talk about? Mm. And that's what you have to have ready right off the bat. Like, I want to talk about X, Y, and Z. And if you give them the type of things that really matter to you that you want to ask them, then you got a much better opportunity of getting them, because they'll say, number one, this is different than what everybody else is asking me. Number two, he's actually got a purpose to getting this thing done, because so many people, like I don't know how many podcasts you've been on, Victor, but you get on like some different ones as a guest and sometimes the host sucks, man. And you're just like, what am I doing here? And so you need to show them you're a professional about what you do. Yep. And I think anytime you have professionalism in what you do and you're always thinking, what type of value can I offer first? That's when it changes, because too many people are thinking about themselves and what they're going to get out of it. And that's one of the things I've looked at with meeting people, is how can I offer you value? I'm always looking to give to people. And because of that, the flow has to balance itself out and I receive. Yeah. You have to think about giving first.
And that's what's huge about it, is that's why I hate things like business cards and stuff like that. It's like, here's my business card. You get in contact with me. Or like, yeah, even if they give you yours, you still kind of, it's like, oh, have you got a business card? Oh, nah, just let's connect on LinkedIn, or what's your email address? I'll flick you through something that, you know, might be of value to you. And
right.
And people are like, oh, yep, cool. And as soon as you can have like a transparent conversation, like I'd go, yeah, in the physio world, I'd go to physical therapist world, I'd go to mm-hmm. say a surgeon's talk, and then I'd email them the next day just saying, yeah, hey, thanks, that was really awesome. And then from then on, you just put all your contact through that email, and so even if they forget who you are, you know, 3 months later, when you not necessarily need something from them, but you might be sending a patient to them or something like that, they're going, oh, okay, that person's, you know, they thanked me for the value that I gave them, and, you know, they said, oh, yeah, that, oh, my patients really think that you're great, they really enjoy coming to you. And then all of a sudden you start getting referrals off them, and it just becomes this kind of mutually awesome relationship. But
well, and I think too, though, it's the uniqueness of that contact as well. Like one of the books I read recently, which was like total like mind blown, was called Giftology by a guy named John Rulon.
Yeah.
And it's about giving gifts that are custom to that person.
Yeah.
So like, for example, I had an author I interviewed, and I happened to find on some obscure blog that he loved reading G.K. Chesterton and C.S. Lewis. So I collect books. You were making fun of my books before and saying, hey, Ty Lopez, knowledge. Because you saw my bookshelf behind me. But I collect old books. So like when I travel, I'll look for old books in bookstores. And I actually had a 1901 edition of a G.K. Chesterton book. So took it, packaged it up, and mailed it to this guy. And basically, I've been able to bounce any idea off of them that I ever want an opinion on, because I just thought about, hey, I just want to give you this because I know you'd appreciate it more than I would.
Yep.
And it's about having unique gifts that actually show you care about, you know, number one, what the person cares about and who they are.
Yep. I think I heard the Giftology guy getting interviewed on Pat Flynn's Smart Passive Income podcast, and he does like corporate gifts, and they avoid Christmas and they avoid
yes.
Easter and things like that. So it's not like, oh, they're giving because they're giving me this shit gift basket at Christmas because they're giving all their clients that. It's like, you know, September the 7th, and they're giving me, you know, some cool tickets to the season openers of the NBA because they know that I love the NBA or whatever it is. And it's just, yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be expensive, but it's just showing that there's thought that's gone into it. But yeah, it's easy, man. Like, who doesn't like getting a gift that doesn't feel like it's bulk bought and sent out to everybody?
Yeah, because we have like, especially like you're talking about with holidays, we have this like compulsory giving, or it's almost like your vomit reflex. Like, yeah. Oh, here's your gift. And it doesn't mean anything. It has no meaning. And when you take the time to just randomly send somebody a gift that like is them, like, you know, that book I paid like, I think £7 for it in a store in London. But it's like, to that guy, it was so much more valuable, and it has a great place on his desk because he got that book.
Yep. And he's going to remember you. Like, it's, I mean, yeah, you're giving the gift, but you want people to remember you, and you want them to remember you for the right reasons. Like, they don't, it's not like, oh, this guy just keeps freaking emailing me just going, hey, we still haven't teed up that time. I'd love you on my show. Like you're saying, it's me. And the only people who care about me is yourself. Like,
well, but there's a little bit of that too, because I think there you can go all the way the other side where you don't follow up as well.
Yeah.
Because there's too many people that send one email and they say, Grant Cardone didn't answer me, he's not going to be on my show. Well, you got to follow up. He's a busy dude. Just don't be an asshole about it, you know?
Yeah.
Excuse exactly. My language.
you're more than fine. This is not PG. But yeah, I agree. And it's that point where you're saying to people like, hey, I don't expect anything back, but you know, I'd love to add further value to you. Like, yeah, a podcast is, I think as podcasters, you need to realize that, the guest is providing, you know, ideally great value to your show, and also ideally, you know, giving you taps into a new audience. But on the flip side, you're giving them a platform to share their message, mm-hmm. you know, whether that's a marketing message or they've just got a message that they want to, you know, create to affect the whole world. It doesn't matter. You're also of value to them. And often I think if we take the me stuff aside from it, you've got to also realize that you're providing a valuable service to people, and whatever you do, it doesn't just have to be podcasting, but you know, every single industry is like that a lot of people devalue themselves because they are thinking that they have to provide this service, where they forget that it's actually a service that they're giving to people as well. But that's a whole another thing. I want to jump into PR with you. Like, you know, we're obviously kind of touched on it with the reach out point, but talk us through what you do with your podcasting PR.
Yeah, so we I want to say November of last year, I was producing podcasts for people.
Yep.
So I was actually going out, doing all the reach out, getting them. And then one of the awareness campaigns before they got on the show, I would get them on a bunch of other shows so people knew who they were. It was great. And I spent a lot of time, like, because I feel like if a podcaster is giving you their time, like, and I feel like as a podcaster yourself, you have a different perspective on this, but you want to respect their platform. Like, too many people just get on there and just start pushing their message. Mm. And you have to understand that you have to have a story that's valuable to the audience that's listening to it. And that's one of the big things that I tell people is, if you want somebody to buy your product or service, talk a little bit about it, but put all your attention on giving them so much value that if they didn't buy anything at all, they would remember you. Mm. Because they'd walk away and they would say, I learned this one thing today that I'm going to be able to implement in my business, and I didn't have to buy anything. This guy's great. Let me check out his website. Next thing you know, you're on your email list and you bought something. So that was one thing I was doing with that. And then I got a call from one of my podcasting friends, Daniel Geffen. And he said, I got this great idea. We're going to get people on podcasts. And I was like, well, I've already been doing that. So we came together and started to get featured, and we've put so much attention on finding the right shows and the right guests to match up, because I think there's too many people that are just trying to get on any show. Mm. And I think you want to make sure the client gets value, but it's all about making sure the podcast gets enough value, because each podcast has their own individual audience that are looking for very particular things. So we spend a lot of time on coaching people. You know, what is the story that's going to resonate with the show you're going on? What message do you want people to walk away with? And then your call to action. So we're really spending time on making sure people are going to deliver before they go on a show, because there's too many people out there that are just, I feel like it's right now with podcasting especially, it's like a very cool thing to do for all these guys that are just trying to get into the entrepreneurial world to say, hey, let me just stick people on podcasts.
Yeah.
And there's more to it than that, because you have to understand how hard and long a lot of people have worked on these platforms. And we were talking before about people sending you like bad pitches.
Yeah.
And I think that's something you have to understand too. We tell people, if you're going to go on a show, listen to a few damn episodes first, because you need to know the person you're talking to. Because let's say you make a comment that has nothing to do with that show. Well, now we look like a jerk and so do you, and you just disrespected the host.
Yeah.
So it's really important to do that and connect with them in that way, so that you're protecting their platform and also delivering great value. And I think that's what really is first and foremost, that if you deliver great value, you get all the other attention and things like that that you want.
And I think one of the important things about creating and crafting that narrative for each show is is making it reflect. But yeah, a lot of people, like you say, they just go straight into it and it's like, yeah, and I run masterminds and I do this and I do that. And you're like, man, take people on a journey. Like, I'll tell you who I think is one of the best podcast guests for creating a narrative that is basically pretty similar at the start with each one, but then goes into each host, is Ryan Levesque.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he's got an amazing, yeah, he's got a story that he's like, yes, yeah, I mean, obviously reading his book as well, but he'll be like, you know, if it's a longer form one, he'll be talking about, you know, how he's in China and, you know, basically goes through his whole book in it to a degree. Other times he'll just be talking about, you know, how they're relaunching something and, you know, what they learned from the previous launch of the Ask Method, or, you know, different things. So it's more like, okay, this is a more of a digital marketing thing. They don't necessarily need to know my backstory, but they want to know my backstory of, you know, my message there is more like, you know, he might say, oh, we launched it last year and, you know, we did really well. We did $2 million or whatever. And, but we realized that we probably left $2 million on the table, and that's what we're, you know, and then he'll give them the learnings from that. And then, you know, a more low-key one, he'll just kind of introduce them to the Ask Method. So he's really good at crafting his narrative around no like and trust for that particular audience. And that's why people, you know, or, I mean, there's kind of that big ecosystem of all the big dogs in the online world who are all mates with each other. But that's why they're happy to get them on there, because he comes on and he just smashes value, particularly for their audience.
Well, and it's also remembering that each one of those like downloads or numbers is a person, and you have to emotionally connect with him. Because it's funny you talk about Ryan Levesque, because he has a really powerful story he told on Pat Flynn's show about how he had driven himself into illness and how he didn't know what was going on in his life, and people connect with that, and they a lot of times aren't going to remember what you told them, but they're going to remember how you made them feel.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the big things you have to understand is they're human beings, man. They're listeners. They're people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We had a big kind of breakout session at a podcast event I spoke at, and it was about how if you've got one listener, then you should keep going. Like, because so many podcasters, they jump in, podcasters, bloggers, whatever, they jump in and they're like, I've only got X amount of clicks, I've only got X amount of followers or listeners, and they just put it into a number where they're like, when really it's like, man, somebody is, and that's why I try and start my show with like, thanks for taking the time to listen, because they, yeah, whoever's listening to this at the moment could be listening to whatever they want right now. They could be watching something, they could be sleeping, they could be doing anything apart from they've chosen to listen to us. So that one person is worth it if you're gonna, you know, have a positive influence on people's lives. But yeah, it's a huge takeaway to people out there. Like, do things for one person. If you do it really well for one person, like you were saying, you're talking to yourself. What would unhappy teaching Jeremy want to hear in this podcast?
Well, I think at the time he wanted some sleep, but that was about it.
And then yeah, you crafted a good message for that, and then the fruits of your labor come in, not necessarily straight away, but they continually build. With business side of things, if we're fast forwarding 2 years from now, what does it look like? What are you doing, and where do you want to be?
It's funny because I do something once a year called like, what is your ideal scene? Like, what are the things you know, what are the haves that you want to have so you can work it backwards? And our goal for the end of next year is to have, this is kind of big, but to have 1,000 clients and to be the most sought after firm for getting people on podcast shows, because we're offering the best quality guests that are trained for shows and that everybody wants them. And that's one of the big things that I like to hear from a host. Hey, your client was great. Thank you so much for sending them. You know, who else do you have?
Yep.
Because if you're getting a response like that, you know, you're doing a great job. So that's really, you know, what I want to see. In terms of like actually having a physical office location, we're more of a distributed work team because my business partner lives in Israel. So I don't know that we're ever going to have a concrete location.
Yep.
But really, I just looked at it on the we've looked at it on the number of people we want to serve. And by the end of 2018, we want to be servicing 1,000 people.
Yeah, nice. I mean, I think you don't need a physical location. You work in the digital world, and you know, we work in a world where everyone's turning into freelancers more so than having any stability or security in jobs. So, you know, if you can have a team around the world, if it works, and it means your business is running 20 hours a day because people are around the world, rather than 8 hours a day or whatever with multiple team members, then it's really, really cool. And what do you think the biggest barriers to that success are going to be?
It's funny because for me, I feel like a lot of times I'm my own worst enemy. Because I'm a smart, high intellect guy, and I think because of that, sometimes I tend to think I'm right all the time.
Yeah.
So my biggest barrier is understanding that maybe I don't have all the answers and I need to find somebody that does, because too often I don't accept those other answers, and sometimes they're better solutions, man. So it's about being humble enough to understand when somebody else is making a better point than you are. And I get in my own way sometimes. And I think when I can get that out of the way is when I perform much better.
Cool. So, I mean, I imagine that's probably your worst business trait. What would you say your best business trait that will build towards success of your business will be?
I am the most damn persistent person you will ever meet in your entire life. I will run my head into a wall 99 times if I'm going to get through it that 100th.
Yeah.
I follow up like a bat out of hell, man. That's my real skill, is persistence.
And so in that case, what does your day look like? on average?
On average, I'm usually a late worker, so I'm not a huge early riser. I'm up about 6:30, 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
Get up, go to the gym. I tend to do a very short workout, about 25 minute power workout. Come back, take a 10 minute cold shower. Gets all the inflammation out of your body, raises your metabolism. And by 8:30, 9 o'clock, I'm working, man. And I will take a break somewhere mid afternoon, between client calls, phone calls, and whatever. And have dinner with my wife around 6 or 7, and then I'm usually working until 11, 12 o'clock at night. And that's a right now thing, man, because right now we're in a phase where we're really, really building. And I don't expect that to be the future, but right now it's a lot of work in the time being.
Yep. And what do you imagine your ideal day would look like in a happy world, a couple of years from now?
I think if I could knock off around 2 or 3 o'clock, that would be fine.
Yep.
It's just kind of like having a shorter day. So that, because you get to a point where you're more the executive, right? So you're able to run a lot of different things in your business, and that's a very necessary place to be. But you don't have to be putting in the same amount of hours. But in order to create everything, you have to be the one creating it.
Yeah, that's what I saw. I heard it. I think it might have been Tim Ferriss talking about it, about Warren Buffett's diary, his daily planner.
Mm.
And he was on some TV show, and they said, "Oh, Warren, you must be so busy." He's like, "Yeah, I am. Do you want to see my planner?" He pulls it out of his top pocket, and he threw it across the table, and they opened it, and it was blank on every day.
Oh my gosh.
And he said, if I put anything more than that into it, if I commit to anything more than that, he said, the whole business is going to collapse. And then he went on a kind of a tirade on how he spends, kind of 80, because of the way he set everything up, he spends 80% of his day reading stock portfolios, reading perspective things, reading offerings, reading business performance, reading about what the future's got in store with everything, so that when that one business offer comes along, he knows everything he needs to know about it, and he can say yes, no, he can negotiate from a point of power, buys that business, and then he's got the team to go in there and follow systems and turn it into a 5,500 times return on investment. But he said, that all comes from having the time to be that executive level person, which is it's a cool thing to talk about theoretically, and it'd be an awesome thing to do, in the real world. So I think it's something that you and I probably are both aspiring to, of that point of, hey, what can I learn to implement to make things better for my team?
You really have to be the one with the vision, right? Because it's got to come from somewhere. And I feel like right now, for some reason, there's a lot of I hate the 1%, and there's a lot of executive hate and stuff like that right now. But that's a super necessary position, because they steer the ship, man. Without them, there's not really anybody who put it there.
Yeah, I laughed because there's Australia Post. I'm living in Australia, and the CEO was on $5 million a year and plus bonuses. Oh, no, he was on $1 million a year, and then his salary, because he hit all his KPIs, ended up being about $5 million a year. And then he left the business, and he didn't take the severance package, and he'd been donating a lot away, but none of that had ever come out. But the comments on this YouTube video when he was getting interviewed was just like, no one's worth $5 million. He's on more than the Prime Minister and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting there going man, if I've got an option of bringing someone in for $100,000 a year who will want 2x my business, or pay somebody $5 million a year or $1 million a year, and then they hit their KPIs and get someone up to 5 million, it means that they've 10, 20, 30. Yeah. He basically took them from $500 million in debt to $2 billion in cash reserves over a 7-year period.
Yeah. I'd say he's worth the money, man. Yeah. Jesus.
But it's just so funny when people put the value on a person of $5 million versus they don't put the value on their position and what they're doing. He's probably worth $100 million for what he did for this business. But, I mean, when you're in those positions, money, you've been in enough positions where money is probably not an object to you. Yeah, you've got houses, you're comfortable, everything else. You just want challenges, and you want to, leave an impact, which he did. He literally saved, Australia's, and it was, when it was in debt, it was a taxpayer burden because it was owned by the government, and now it generates money for the government. So you can't really, I don't know where people get anger from it, but it was an interesting kind of, kind of concept with that is, you know, from the high level exec side of things, you know. But apparently he's bad because he laid off, you know, 1,500 people in the process to save, well, to save 7,000 other jobs or something like that.
Yeah, if the whole ship's going to sink anyway, then you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Chuck the woman and children over first. No. No. But just to finish up, what is, you've already given one book, which we'll link in the show notes, but where what's one other book that has, or one or two other books, just because you're a literature major, I better give you a couple that have influenced you or you think would be beneficial to young entrepreneurs out there.
Wow. They would have to have an attention span for the one. I just read a really great biography of U.S. President Harry Truman by David McCullough. That was a great book. And I like looking at people that are high-level leaders like that, because they really have to do so many different things that people don't expect. So that was really cool to see a lot of his strategy in the Second World War. Also, the four-hour work week, man. Not because I want to work 4 hours, and I know Tim Ferriss like gets really annoyed with people calling him the four-hour guy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But it's the idea of putting systems into your business. And I think a lot of people don't think about that. We waste so much time and energy. And if you just kind of look at it from a higher level of how can I put systems in my business, that's where that book's been really valuable to me.
It's how can you 80-20 life, basically. Business, exactly. Life, everything. And like as you're saying, I do a short workout or do this, yeah, this cold shower. I was about to go, oh, I don't think you're a Tim Ferriss fan at all.
No, not at all. Man. Not at all.
I mean, I'm a groupie of his, and he'll be on the show one day. He just doesn't know it yet. and
the original title of that book, by the way, was "Drug Dealing for Fun and Profits."
it's like I would have picked that up, but I know that a million other people have picked up the 4-hour work week because they've been in the airport, disgruntled, flying somewhere for work, and they've gone, fuck my boss, like I'm going to pick up this book and then I'm going to just be working 4 hours a week. But I mean, I've had multiple guests on here who have actually, I had one guy who got to 4-hour work month and was still generating six figures with the drop shipping business, and then took 6 months off and disappeared and went and trained and then won a world taekwondo champs. And yeah, but then he came back and obviously the way that he filled those other bajillion hours a week was doing all the taekwondo. He came back, he's like, I'm bored. This 4-hour work month sucks. And yeah, and then he just created more businesses and had more time to be the higher level person. But yeah, it's pretty cool. So I will link though the 4-hour work week, which is probably, he's probably got the most links to his website coming from mine, and that other book, which I'll be sure to have a look up myself at the show notes, passiveincomeyoung.com. Just loved having you on and just want to welcome you to the Youngpreneurs family. If people want to check out more about what you're up to and find out more about your podcast, where can they go? What can they do?
Two best places are either createyourownlife.com or getfeatured.com.
Awesome.
You can find everything else linked up over there, all the social and everything.
Cool. Well, we'll link all of that. It's been an absolute pleasure, man. And I look forward to connecting more in the future and watching you impact those 1,000 people over the next 12 to 18 months.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me today, Victor. This has been awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Youngpreneurs Podcast. This was proudly brought to you by the Podcast Institute, the number one training resource to take your business from chasing leads to leads chasing you, and from an absolute amateur to a full-blown authority. If you're looking to take your business to the next level, then a podcast is the obvious answer. You can get national and global exposure in a very fast time, and it's just exactly what I've done with this podcast. So if you want to find out more, get a checklist on how you can get started for under $60, and to find out more through a small training video that I've prepared for you all, then please check out passiveincomeyoung.com/podcast training.